It's all getting a bit stressful, all right?
I have my limit, Toad, and I think we reached it 10 minutes ago.
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat.
Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
And welcome to Behind the Panels, issue 101, the comic book show that killed Archie. I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
Dave Longo.
In this issue, Thor becomes a Disney princess. Still not as strange as the time he was a frog or when Loki gave birth to a horse. Also, a new Captain America, Iron Man goes silver. Marvel Studios announced film dates until 2019 and Quantum and Woody lead the Harvey Award nominations. Then there's a new Teen Titans team. Robin's back. Boom goes on the black market and more in what we've been reading. Plus, our Kick-Ass Pick of the Week, Fables, Legends in Exile and Animal Farm by Bill Willingham, Lan Medina and Mark Buckingham for Vertigo. This is Behind the Panels.
Now Peter,
Piper,
pick peppers,
but run rock,
rhyme,
Humpty,
Dumpty,
fell
down,
that's his heart,
time,
Jack me,
nimble,
what,
nimble,
and he was
quick,
but jam,
massive,
mud,
faster, Jack saw Jace, his
my little boy, B. Cole lost her sheep, and Rip Van Winkle fell a hell asleep, and out of chillin' somewhere in Wonderland, Jack serving Jill bucket in his hand, and damn, that's a big licking out that sound, the turntables might wobble, but they don't fall down.
Yes, fellas, we're winding down after last week's party. It's number 101. We're on our way to 200 now.
There's a bigger milestone here that needs to be mentioned.
Now you're saying this is issue 101, so what you're saying is...
This is Comics 101.
But it also marks the 500th episode of this network.
Yes, we
just,
will.
This is just a month of celebrations, isn't it?
Look, we couldn't get any drunker, though, if we tried.
We could try.
We always try to get drunker.
Nice catch, Batman.
Same to you. Too bad it was a foul ball.
Tough luck, Penguin. Looks like your new nesting place is going to be behind bars.
You mean we're all going to jail?
But, Penguin, you said we were going to get rich.
Well, there's nothing wrong with getting rich. What went wrong was the way you went about it.
Yes, you learned a valuable lesson today. Never get involved with a dirty bird.
So, yes, we had a bit of a fable theme going in the opening music, which was, of course, Pied Piper by Run DMC. And it is Fables this week. It's a book that we've... It's taken us 101 issues to get around to.
Yeah, and I've got to say, it's a book that I have been looking at and a book that I've been going, I must read that, and just never got to.
Yes.
And when you finally said, right, we're doing Fables.
I think it was actually Dave Longo said,
yeah. Right, we're doing Fables. It's like, okay, it's my opportunity to finally read this book. And I'm very glad we did.
Yes, and you're only 140-something issues behind.
I know.
But we know this, it's coming to
They're
an end.
They're on my iPad. Right?
Don't make me play the montage that we played last week. Go back and listen to episode 100. If this is your first episode of Behind the Panels, where have you been?
Yeah, absolutely.
And welcome.
Hello.
And welcome. So it's time for a little section we like to call traditionally in this rundown of paneling behind what we call what we've been reading. So let's do it.
Well, looks like we got ourselves a reader.
Read between the lines, bitch.
Hey, I want to start this one off because there was a book that sucked all the air out of the room for me this week, which was a big 300-page graphic novel by Brian Lee O'Malley. If you know the name, Scott Pilgrim versus the World, you might have heard of it.
Mm-hmm. Now, this wasn't actually on our reading list for this week.
Yes, it was. It was just in there. But I didn't expect you to read it because we want to do this as a pick of the week.
Right.
I want to mention it because it was a big read for the week. It was just one that I sat down and just devoured. Because I love this to death. This is a book. I don't want to talk about what it's about too much because part of the joy of the book is the discovery. Mm-hmm. All I got to say is sit down with a big pot of mushrooms and just the edible kind, not the hallucinogenic kind, although, and then let this book transport you because it is beautiful. And I don't think I've been moved this much by a book since maybe Jeff Lemire's Essex County.
Oh, really?
Okay. And it really is just a personal thing. And a lot of the same themes as John Favreau's Chef, which we all enjoyed on GMC and we all spoke about that there. But just the whole idea of second chances and going back and changing what has gone wrong, and maybe that's not always a good idea. and it is one of those books. The art style is simple, but as Dave was saying to me before the show, it's like, yeah, it's simple, but you try replicating it. It is simple but effective and beautiful, and I cannot read. It literally came out this week, this brand new graphic novel. I urge everyone to go and do it, and I think after our Guardians of the Galaxy special in 2 weeks, we'll probably do this as a pick.
Okay.
So I'm getting it this week. Yeah. My mission to get it, I got the last copy in a bookstore.
Yeah.
And
it just disappeared off Australian bookshelves.
You'd think it would have been a Harry Potter release or something.
Yeah. It's massive. Yeah. So
I got it. Yay.
Yay. I know. And you've read bits of it and you can agree.
I'm nearly finished. Yeah.
You can agree that it's a beautiful book.
It's amazing so far. Yeah.
So I just wanted to mention that because it is it's the one that sort of led the way for me this week. But DC released a brand new book this week. There's a few debuts that came out this week. Teen Titans number one didn't need to be a brand new issue. And this is the book where the cover art probably had more controversy around it than anything else, with, I believe, one comic book resources writer referred to breasts of Wonder Girl being larger than her head on the cover of the thing.
Which she seems to have a really long neck as well.
And a massively long neck. It's almost borderline Rob Liefeld art here, but it's actually...
I wouldn't go that far.
No, it's actually Kenneth Rockerford, who actually did a lot of the new designs to the New 52, including that new effeminate Lobo character that was out
a little while ago. Metrosexual Lobo.
Metrosexual Lobo. I've always had a problem with the term metrosexual because to me it sounds like someone who has relationships with entire cities. But anyway, Teen Titans, it's a good action issue. I mean, that's effectively what it does, and it does that well.
The issue I had with this was I was reading the Teen Titans from the launch of the New 52, and it lost me about halfway through its run because the problem that I had with the book was this is the Teen Titans. They're a team of superheroes who get together and do stuff. However, in the New 52, they never got together as a team. They did nothing but bicker and complain and fight with each other and never actually work as a team. They were just this group of people who had too much power for their own good and kept getting in each other's
ways. Well, they're always incongruous because the whole New 52 is based around the fact that we've still got the Justice League kind of forming.
Yeah.
And the whole point of the Teen Titans were they were a group that came along where it's like, well,
it's the sidekicks.
All of our heroes, Papa Bears and Mama Bears have all got their own team, so maybe we should have one too.
Exactly. And so the problem I had with this book was, A, it should never have been issue one.
No.
Because to be a rebrand, to be a relaunch of a book, you expect it to be different.
And it's such a cynical relaunch too, because it's got like all the creators' names on the cover are like at FIFA, Will FIFA being the author. It's not actually even his Twitter handle. His Twitter handle is something else. And they've got all these hashtag in underscore your underscore
face. It's trying
face,
to make itself
you know?
So totes young.
Yeah. But let me tell you, it's amazeballs served up with awesome sauce.
However,
did you guys know the title is Blinded by the Light?
Well, that all being said...
Sounds like... It's a pop song waiting to happen.
Amazing. It was written by a machine.
Well, it was.
And drawn like a machine. You know how they say that you can tell good comic book art based on how many expressions the characters have? I think in this, you can see like maybe four different expressions throughout the entire book,
and one of them is totes.
Like an epic
one
car chase, and they're just like glaring still.
Well, let me just get this out. The thing though that I will defend this book. I mean, I didn't. I still think it's a cynical launch. I think it should just be Teen Titans 32 or whatever it was supposed to be. I don't understand why it was relaunched. However, that all being said, it is the Teen Titans book that we wanted two and a half years ago.
Wasn't Beast Boy brown last time we saw him?
No, he was always green.
No, but like apparently he lost the green for a while. I've not explained why
remember,
he's green.
Oh, remember, I stopped reading it halfway through the run. But this was a straightforward team action scene.
But they even did that thing where it's like they've got somebody locked away in like the equivalent of a bunker, and they keep cutting back to them to like narrate. It's like that scene in Batman Begins where they've got the two guys in the tower as the train's coming to go. If the train gets any closer, it'll crash into us. If it crashes into us, it'll blow up. If it blows up, we'll all be doomed. And it's kind of like they do that.
And then after it's all settled, they sit back in their chairs and go, whew.
Don't worry, I think they're going to make it.
I don't think it's a particularly well-written book. I think it is a one action scene where they actually have a team that works together finally. I didn't object to the art. The art is very traditional comic books.
Yes.
And, you know, for me, I kind of like that traditional comic book, everything's larger than life look. I don't really like the expressionistic comic books a little bit. You know, that's just not me. Not when it comes to superheroes. When it comes to other books, it's fine. My superheroes, I like to be really larger than life, you know?
Speaking of larger than life, Robin Rises Omega.
Oh, dear. Okay, you
my
have
favorite
to go
book
there.
Of the week, Richard. Would
you, yeah. Tell us why, Dave.
Yeah. Comics 101.
It is the theme of the issue.
Look, I'll go really quickly on Robin Rises Omega, because I think Grant Morrison's run on Batman is, like, phenomenal. That's the actual Comics 101. Whereas what this does is it retells the entire run of Grant Morrison in flashback and then spits in its face. That's enough for me, Richard.
I don't think much more needs to be said, except for the fact that the end of the issue was like, I'm bringing Robin back alive next week. Batman and Robin.
I swear, Grant Morrison should have had a writing credit on this bloody book.
Like, it was
like
basically
20 pages of it is just recapping what he wrote.
I love the fact that Wonder Woman appears 3/4 through the issue. Comes in with her a band of merry people. They beat the people off, and then she goes, oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, they beat the people off.
Well, whatever, you know. And then afterwards, she goes, oh, did I mess up? Oh, I'm sorry, Batman. We came in without even thinking.
We don't need your apologies. Quiet, you.
Quiet, you.
Pretty much the scene that played out there. The other big DC book that came out this week is Deep Breath. Harley Quinn invades Comic-Con International San Diego, #1. It was easy when it was called San Diego Comic-Con,
yeah.
But it's harder to say. This is like the most meta book. This is basically like Harley Quinn issue 0.
This was a remarkably silly book. Let's not beat around the bush. It is a remarkably silly book. However, if you're in the Harley Quinn mode, it's a lot of fun.
If you've ever been to a Comic-Con, there's about a billion Harley Quinns.
Yes.
There, and they play up on that.
And I went to Comic-Con once, and this was exactly my experience.
You got dragged out every day.
Yeah,
right?
I shot a guy. I killed a guy. And then,
I think my favorite.
No one said anything.
My favorite scene is where she opens the door and there's all the Jokers, and she goes, "I know, they're not the real one, but what the hell?"
And it's like, readers, you're gonna have to use your imagination at this point. And then, but my favorite scene was actually DC's actual willingness to poke a little bit of fun at there, or at least Palmiotti and Connors poking fun at DC editorial, where they actually has Dan Didio makes a, or Didio if you prefer, makes a cameo, and he's saying, with a new 52 September event we have coming up, each and every title will come with a special 4D cover. It's basically a 3D cover, and the extra D is for Didio. I'll be featured in the background of every book. I swear, 2015 September, that's what's going to happen.
That's what's going to happen, isn't it? It's not even a joke.
He's just basically telling us that's...
And there's a dig at Marvel at one stage, I think.
Yeah, there's a couple of digs.
Oh, the one where they're talking about, I could go across the road, but they don't want to do anything new or original.
How rich is that? And Jim Lee.
Oh, Jim Lee.
The hero worship of Jim Lee.
Oh, Bruce Timm.
Look,
Stephen J. Amell.
I applaud Connor and Palmiotti for this book, just for having kind of the balls to do this. Yeah. You know,
we'll hear the announcement next week. It's like, you know, Palmiotti and Connor are leaving DC. Yeah. Everybody else has. The Devilers, or the Devilers.
The Devilers.
Can we just say, I hope they release this Hell Girl as an actual issue.
Yeah. Oh, which is the comic she's drawing in there. IDW put about the Devilers this week, which is Joshua Hale Fyakov, who was Marvel writer for ages.
I believe
doing a whole lot of A-list titles. This one is kind of a little bit Exorcist meets...
It's a little bit Constantine, actually.
A little bit Constantine as well, which is a big... A lot of comics companies are doing this
He actually says in the notes at the end of the book, he says it's his return to Beasts and Monsters after a long spell, and he's kind of having fun doing it. But,
and the art's by Matt Triano.
Yeah, look, it's a fun book. It's one of those sort of books where you sit there and go, I didn't mind it, but at the same time, I didn't love it. It's just kind of
got
like
a cynical priest... The Vatican's burning, you know.
Yeah.
You know, they go
and you got the young kid who basically wants to believe, and he's been sent to this cynical priest. But of course, the cynical priest is saying it's not all true. Yet it's all happening right in front of them. You know. So
I do really like the fact that they've got the priest who's got this kind of demon, kind of bear minotaur thing that he's leading around. It's an interesting concept. I'll stick with it for a second issue.
Yeah, look, I'll read it for a second issue as well and have a look at it.
It's worth checking out digitally. There is a talking frog, I think, at one stage as well. So it's, you know, check it out for a bit of harmless fun. Squidder, #1, also an IDW book. This is Ben Templesmith doing the Lovecraft book that he said he's been going to do.
I didn't understand the first half.
Honestly, I didn't either. And I sort of got to a point where they're anointing this girl and things are happening and eventually stuff happens that you think, oh, okay, right. That's
halfway through the book, you kind of reach this point and you go, oh, I get it. I understand what's going on. But the first half still doesn't make any sense.
But the reason you get this is that Ben Templesmith's artwork is sublimely beautiful. He's got this way of colouring and illustrating that makes it look as though the page is actually glowing.
Yeah, it looks like it's on fire.
And you remember he did 10 grand for a while for Image, and it's kind of got that same sort of style to it because it's got a very similar sort of theme to it as well. But actually, 10 grand is more like The Devilers.
Yes.
That kind of, because they're all kind of a variation on the Constantine Hellblazer concept.
Also along that, for this month, I want to throw this book out there very quickly because I think I have the pull quote for the cover.
Yeah.
Which is the book Dark Engine.
Oh, yes.
Which came out. And I've got to say, the pull quote for this cover should be, not since Pretty Deadly has a book come out that I have no idea what happened to.
It was an odd bird. I'll give you that.
I don't understand it. I literally don't understand anything that happened in the book, and I won't be coming back because I didn't understand it.
This one was an Image book by Ryan Burton, and John Bivens did the artwork with letters by Crank. you're right. I was the art is quite beautiful. The coloring, the colors on it are really, really next level stuff. But you're right.
It is incomprehensible.
Flicking through it again now, all I seem to remember is like, oh, that's right. There was some kind of Stone Age girl running around wearing the head of a giant dinosaur.
But
who
ends up splitting open and having all of her entrails dragged out by the end. And you sit there and go, okay, so she's not the hero.
Yeah. So I like Pretty Deadly. I might read the second issue to see if it explains the first.
Maybe. Look, did you notice it was a really supernatural month this month? There was a lot of supernatural titles that came out. It seems to be a real trend at the moment within books.
Horror's always been big in comics, and certainly for the indies, horror has been big. And
the one book I did like this month,
yes,
and I do want to come back for more because I quite liked it, was Black Market.
Black Market I adored.
Yeah, I thought Black Market was a really interesting book. Now, this came out through...
This one's Boom Studios.
And basically the idea is people who are harvesting the blood and other bits and pieces from superheroes or from superpowered people.
This is... And the writer on this one is Frank J. Barbera. I'm not quite sure how to pronounce that. But he did... Five Ghosts, The Haunting of Fabian Gray, which was an amazing book and had a real retro feel to it, which is kind of kept in this as well because Victor Santos's art is got that real retro kind of almost noirish feel. I think I said I wrote it up on Behind the Panels, and it's like somewhere between what Sean Phillips does with the Ed Brubaker kind of thing and a little bit of almost Oming in there as well, that kind of thing, and the colours in there. The guy who does the colors is what really sells this for me. Just Adam Metcalf does these really kind of slightly desaturated retro looking colors that you don't get a lot in modern comics, and it is colored almost the way they kind of half light faces in orange and purple. It's the kind of stuff you get more.
And the other thing that's nice about this,
it's
book,
like noir.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing that's nice about this book is it's only going to be 4 issues.
Yes.
So it's not going to.
But then again, Fabian Gray started as a miniseries of 5 issues.
Now it's continuing.
And by
on.
The fourth one, they said, "Let's make this an ongoing."
Yeah.
So you never know. Because that's my only concern with this is that he's introduced so many concepts in this first issue. Whether he'll be able to wrap it up by issue 4.
Well, hopefully he's already written it. So yes. If he's already written it, we already.
Or whether it's going to get a rush conclusion or something,
yeah,
you know.
We
but
never know.
But still, I'm totally in on this book because I like the characters. It a little bit reminds me of that book. There's aspects of. Oh, I've forgotten the name of it. But there was another book that came out late last year about someone who was forced to be a black market organ.
Harvest,
of course. Yeah.
Good book.
There's elements of Harvest in here as well.
Yes.
Thank you. That was the one.
No worries. Yeah.
And,
that was a good book, yeah.
And so it's a little bit like that meets, you know, Ed Brubaker meets, you know, even a bit of Bendis in there as well. Bendis's non-superhero stuff, you know, so all that mesh about. And so I'm in. I really like it.
Look, I'm in for the four issues. Get it out, David.
Sing Sherry.
I'm in for the 4 issues, so it'll be interesting. The other thing that came out this week, because we didn't talk about it really last week, was The Wicked and Divine.
Oh, yeah, the first issue we didn't talk about at all.
But the second issue came out this week.
Speaking of books that just disappeared off shelves.
Yeah, absolutely. This is an interesting book. Second issue I don't think is as solid as the first issue. It is basically the concept of idol worship for rock stars and stuff like that. But what if those rock stars actually were gods.
Yeah.
Whether or not that is something that is actually a real thing. And do they actually have powers, and are they really indoctrinating our young?
And so there's two covers for every issue, like The Wicked and The Divine, yeah, and The Beautiful. They've actually got one cover that's like a complete ape of like a David Bowie look.
Yeah. That's one of the main characters, yeah, who is or isn't Satan. So yeah, basically the concept is every few years the gods are given bodies.
Yep.
And they are put on Earth. And what do they do? And then after a certain
Like a Rumspringer.
And then after two years, they literally explode. And off they go. Yeah. And it's back. And it's like, are these the gods? Are these not the gods? Yeah. You know? It's a really interesting idea.
It's a fascinating concept.
It will be interesting to see how this progresses.
Next week then, some of the stuff that we're going to look out for, which is the books coming out on the 23rd of July. This is one that's got to talk about, which is Gru versus Conan.
I can't wait for this book.
Gru the Wanderer. And it's actually Sergio Aragonés's Gru with like a traditionally drawn Conan. So it's kind of that dichotomy in there. The other book that we can't wait for is Batman number 33. It is the final issue of Zero Year.
I'm actually waiting for 34, quite frankly.
No, if there ever was a time that we could play, that would be the time to do it.
You guys know how DC's giving out a free copy of Batman Detective Comics 27?
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think that's to make up for for this. You know?
I totally reckon. The other one that's coming out is Superman 33, which is the second issue of the Johns Romita stuff.
And I really like the first one. I really like it. Yeah.
Speaking of gods, Walt Simonson... part of he being a creative god for IDW, but he's also doing a book called Ragnarok, which is the Twilight of the Gods.
Yes.
So that'll be like that's the traditional myth-based one as well. I had to include this in there because we're all going to read this and mock it accordingly. Transformers versus G.I. Joe, number one. IDW.
We lose.
Now, this is really interesting. Warren,
the more you know.
Warren
knowing is half the battle.
That's the one.
Well, Warren Ellis has two books out next week. Of course, there's a third issue of Trees. But there's also Supreme Blue Rose, and it's just playing with a Supreme character, but there's this this Blue Rose version of it is my understanding of it. So this will be interesting. This is coming out from Image next week. I'm fascinated by what they're doing with this. But of course, two books that we've always been reading, Saga and Revival, absolutely, have their next issues out next week, so we're totally down for that. From Marvel, Storm number one is coming out. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with her as a solo character. Although she's kind of already got her own book with X-Men.
Yeah, I know.
It's a female-led
book. And you know how I feel about the X-Men at the moment.
Yeah.
So.
But also, for all of us, we're huge Doctor Who fans. Titan is putting out two Doctor Who books, and I've already read these, but I'm embargoed about talking about them until next week. is Doctor Who, the 10th Doctor number one, and Doctor Who, the 11th Doctor number one. So they're obviously set between seasons.
Right.
And there's a 12th Doctor series coming out in September after the new Capaldi series starts. So they're all things to look out for next week. So big, big week of reading ahead of us. We probably won't discuss all of those, but there's a lot to choose from.
Absolutely.
For next week. I think it's time that we did some well-rehearsed news headlines.
Marvel announced that following the fall from grace of the current Thor, a new female Thor will take his place as Jason Aaron and Russell Dalterman launch Thor number one in October.
Marvel dropped a second bombshell when they announced that Sam Wilson, aka Falcon, will take over the mantle of Captain America, being the first African-American character in the role.
Writer Tom Taylor will also join Marvel as he takes on the new Superior
Iron
Man.
Oh, you hussy, Tom.
Moving Tony Stark to San Francisco as part of Marvel's Avengers Now.
Matt Fraction has revealed that the current series of Hawkeye will come to an end in October with number 22. Love is a good comics around the world. Weep.
DC Comics October slate will include Earth 2, World's End, New Gods, Godhead, The Multiversity, The Just from Grant Morrison, and new series Arkham Manor from Gary Duggan, Gotham Academy from Becky Cloonan, and Deathstroke from Tony S. Daniel, in addition to the titles announced last week. It's the new 5252.
Well, Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo will also start a new story arc from Batman number 35 in October called Endgame.
The all-star team of Jeff Lemire, Matt Kind, and Paolo Rivera will collaborate on a self-contained prestige format miniseries called The Valiant, due to start in December.
IDW will release a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Ghostbusters crossover miniseries and a new Edward Scissorhands miniseries in October.
Marvel Studios has announced dates for five new films from 2016 through to 2019. No titles have been announced.
True Blood star Deborah Ann Woll is Karen Page in Marvel's Daredevil for Netflix. Oh.
Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 2 will debut on Tuesday, September 23rd in the US. No Australian release date has been announced as yet. What a surprise.
Because, as you said, they haven't finished playing Season 1.
It'll be a bonus feature on the Arrow Season 2 DVD.
And finally, Quantum and Woody leads the Harvey Award nominations announced this week with nominations in 6 categories. It's slightly ahead of the traditional leaders, Hawkeye with 5 and Saga with 4. Marvel leads on 13 nominations and Image follows closely with 11, with literal Dark Horse on 10 nods. DC Comics received a single nomination for Danny Mickey's inks on Batman.
That is really embarrassing, yeah. Can I just tell you?
And the Harvey nominations are by other creators. Yeah. So that's interesting. One of the things what we have to talk about quickly are all these Marvel... changes. because this is probably, apart from Archie being shot in Life of Archie this week, as being the stories that have received the most media attention. Now,
can we just park that for 1 second? Because yeah. There's been a lot of stuff.
You don't
in the
want
press.
To park your car.
No, I know. There's been a lot of stuff in the press about Archie being shot. Let's just clarify this. There are multiple Archie books. The book that he was shot in, I believe, was Life with Archie, which is actually a hypothetical Archie anyway. This is the one where he got married and all that sort of stuff.
Archie and Veronica blush.
It's been a while.
So basically, this is all just an extension. Archie is still alive and well in other Archie books.
It's actually adult Archie. It's old Archie. Yeah,
it's like, let's clarify that for people, because people are just going, Archie's been shot. It's like, really? Who's been reading Archie anyway? But besides
These stories have hit the main media because of the way that Marvel announced them. Marvel announced the female Thor, which is basically in the comics, Thor loses, is no longer worthy to carry the hammer, but a woman picks up the hammer and she is, and she will be.
So it's not actually Thor.
Well, they're calling
her
Thor. The way they announced it, it was like, you know, she's not Thorina or Lady Thor or whatever. She is Thor. I'm like, but isn't that his name?
Yeah, he is Thor, the son of Odin.
So anyway, I don't know how that works, but still, I like the idea that they're having a strong female character in a headline book. And they actually went so far as to announce it on The View, which is the daytime show, because we all know that...
We're all watching The View live, weren't we?
Oh, dear.
We all know that Marvel's target market is, has, and will always be 40-year-old women.
Yeah. Bette Midler's a big fan.
But when I thought about this afterwards, I thought... 40-year-old women who have children, yes, who might want to be buying their kids
a book. Because there is still the misconception that comic books are only for children.
Exactly. Yeah. So they're still, I mean, look, you know, we've got to get a new generation of readers, because probably demographically, I don't think it's kids that are reading comics anymore at all. They're far too distracted with interesting things. But the other major story was made in a lot more fun by Joe Quesada on the Colbert Report. Was the story about Falcon taking over from Captain America as the new Captain America, who has lost his powers with the super soldier serum being sucked out of him by Iron Nail, I think.
Let me get this right, though. Falcon doesn't have any superpowers.
No. But, you know, neither did... I suppose Bucky Barnes did a little bit.
Well, Bucky Barnes, at least, I mean, he was experimented on by the Russians.
That's true.
Falcon has his ability for his flight suit.
Yeah.
Didn't Bucky get an injection as well?
Well, Bucky had all the... He was kind of like this Russian experiment with the bionic arm and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. My point is that... I guess, though, with Steve Rogers, if you take away the super soldier formula, he is a weakling.
Yeah, I think that's the difference. I'm being confused.
And he's also aged.
Yeah.
He's also aged 64 years, whatever it is. So he's actually old Steve Rogers now. You know, flesh is still, spirit's still willing, but the flesh is not even close. Yeah, so they need someone. And look, you know, someone sort of spoke about these things saying, oh, it's tokenistic, you know, a female Thor and a black Captain America. Totally a token, you know, making Iron Man silver and calling it superior. It's like, so Nemer Afshar, who we've had on the show before, actually made a really good point. He said, like, you know, for every... you know, African-American person who is working in a minimum wage job in the US and, let's face it, historically has been done badly, has done badly in the US, you know, having a black character in a headline book is a massive, massive
as
thing.
As Captain America,
you know,
not just a headline book. It's Captain America.
The flag wearing, you know, character.
The representation of America
is not a token thing. No, it's a massive, massive flag being planted by Marvel.
And even if Steve Rogers comes back, which he will,
of course he will,
and he will take over. We have this moment.
Yeah,
you know,
and then people will then follow Sam Wilson into other books.
And we have a woman as being. arguably one of the most powerful characters in the Marvel Universe.
And let's face it, because Thor, historically, has been one of the books that has treated women pretty badly, because the whole Jane Foster thing, where she literally was a cheerleader for Thor, went to Asgard and couldn't handle it because she was just a woman and she was just, you know, and they had to send her back down. Only when they, like, I think, made her.
I think it could be argued that it was because she was only human, but that's
no, no, no. They actually, there's this whole thing because she was too weak willed. And you don't, I mean, Lois would have been able to handle it. Lois Lane would have been able to.
Yeah, well, Sif obviously handles it fine, you know. It's like, it's because there's a certain strength.
In both respects, you know, and this isn't a tokenistic thing for Marvel. Because Marvel has got strong female characters elsewhere, and they've got strong ethnic characters elsewhere, Ms. Marvel being an example of both.
Yeah, and now Thor, having once had a relationship with Sif, does this mean we're going to now have a lesbian relationship in Thor?
Possibly.
We're breaking boundaries.
I joked in the opening title about Loki giving birth to a horse. It's like, this is actually happening. Norse mythology, Loki mothered an eight-legged horse. These are stories that won't turn up in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, no. I don't think.
No, that's what they've announced, haven't they?
Yeah.
Loki's horse, a god named horse.
A god named horse. I think it will.
And they announced Captain New Jersey as well, right? You know, that's 2018. Yeah.
He goes, forget about it.
It's gonna be, hey, wait,
you want me? I should go save those guys over there. You know, I'm on my break here. Go talk to my union. Oh,
put some of the superpowered serum in the water. I'll take a drink.
What are you, these guys? You got the Avengers for that. You don't need me. I gotta go get a slice.
The mansion's hidden, like the lab is hidden inside, like a waste management.
And you have to see a psychologist on the side, right?
Yeah. New Jersey residents around America have just yelled at us.
Hey, we love New Jersey. That's where Tesla was from.
Jersey's fabulous. Love Jersey.
We love New Jersey.
And that other guy, Edison.
And Kevin Smith.
Yeah. We mock because we love.
And Bruce Willis.
And Bruce Willis. I think it's... I think
next week, combine the panels. New Jersey.
Let's find a book set in New Jersey.
We just review New Jersey.
Well, speaking of legendary places, it's time for our kick-ass pick of the week.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
Once upon a time, all the characters of the world storybooks were driven out of their homes by the evil adversary. Forced to live mundane lives in the real world of New York, some manage to hide their identities, but all are legends. In Exile. Winner of 14 Eisner Awards, creator and writer Bill Willingham and artists Lan Medina and Mark Buckingham make modern myths out of familiar faces. This is what happens to your happily ever afters. This is Fables.
I've missed that, man.
That music it took was two different tracks from the Fable soundtrack for the serialized game from Telltale.
Really?
So that's where that music's from, if you recognize it. I haven't actually played that yet, I'm told it's Game of the Year material.
I played the first chapter.
Yeah, it's
good.
And
that's what made me go, holy crap, this is what Fables is?
Yeah.
That's why I messaged you guys.
What platform is this game on?
I've got it on Mac from
You can get
Steam.
It on Mac, PC, you can get it on, I think you can get
Probably
it on PlayStation.
I
know you can get it on PlayStation because the final chapter's right there for download for me at the moment. So I'm guessing Xbox as well. So it's pretty much
I've
available.
I've got PlayStation and Xbox. I might actually have a look.
Well, that's what happened because I never jumped on Fables. Like, I should have, you know, and like all of us here at this table, like I think Richard's read it from
the
beginning.
I actually
you've
read
got,
it.
You've got issue one.
Yeah, I've got the first couple of issues. I actually read this when it came out because I cast my mind back to when I think it was early 2000s when this first came out, 2002-ish. It was a massive deal. This was kind of like the relaunched Vertigo at the time. This was Vertigo sort of coming back in a massive way. And they came out with that and Why the Last Man came out not too long afterwards. And it was a golden era for Vertigo. So it was a massive deal. And I you know, you never would have thought that it would be 130-something issues in, you know, over a decade later. We're talking about, as I said in the introduction, this is a book that has won 14 Eisner Awards, but also another half dozen or more for like letterers and people like that. This is one of the most acclaimed books, and I can't believe it's taken us this long to get around to it. Mark Buckingham's written a lot. It's also spawned several spin-off series. Fairest, this most recent one, but there was Jack of Fables as well. Several standalone graphic novels. It's also
isn't
spawned,
this one called The Unwritten or something?
Yep,
like that?
There's The Unwritten, which is a separate series, but there's a crossover with The Unwritten at one point towards the end. It's a crossover last year called The Unwritten Fables. Several standalone novels as well. Also, I think some of them written by Mark Buckingham, who's kind of like done, you know, for fairy tales what Robert Kirkman did for, you know, zombies yeah. over at Image. It's just created a massive empire out
Can
of
I
it.
Can I tell you, this entire book for me was summed up in one panel.
I know the panel.
You know the panel. And when I was telling my son that he should really read this, because this is a – I'll start off the bat and just say that I adored this book and devoured this first graph, this first collection. But for me, it summed up – they're at the celebration and we have Cinderella sit down next to
Pinocchio.
And
I love this bit too.
And
she said,
summed up in one panel, they have a discussion. And in the discussion, basically, she's saying, you know, you come here every year. And he's saying, you know, I hate this thing. She goes, well, why do you come? And he basically says he's waiting to see. One day he's hoping the blue fairy will turn up. And she says, why? And his line is, he goes, I am over 3 centuries old and I still haven't gone through puberty. I want to grow up. I want my balls to drop and I want to get laid.
I love it. So for those of you not familiar with the series, basically it's, as we sort of outlined in the introduction, all the fables have been exiled in New York, and it's basically set in two places. There's in inner city New York, in Manhattan, in the boroughs, where you've got all the fables basically living together and running themselves as an autonomous community. And these are mostly the people who are the fables who look like humans, so your Snow Whites, or people who have managed to glamour themselves so they look like humans. So the Big Bad Wolf is operating as the town cop, as Bigby Wolf, mm-hmm. and who leads the first story arc. And there's also...
It's kind of like Diagon Alley in Harry Potter.
Yeah, it's like, a lot like that, actually. And it's actually interesting how many things have been influenced by this as well, because this came around before that. And then you've got upstate New York, where it's the farm, which is all the fables who can't fit in. So the Three Little Pigs, or
the giants.
Giants and dragons and, you know, people like that. And you've actually got...
Old Mother Hubbard.
The shoe house and all that sort of stuff. Bigby Wolf and Snow White are effectively the leads throughout most of this. And they remain so. And you know, their relationship as it develops sort of carries on.
Well, Snow White is such a great character.
She's a brilliant character. And as you find out, you know, there are different levels of fables, you know, depending on how popular the character is, you know, they're harder to kill and all that sort of stuff. And
which you don't actually find out till the very end of this. And this is what was so interesting, was because up until that point, the fables have all basically come to start living in New York and they're doing their bit. But they're just like people, basically. And so they can die and everything else. At the end of this this particular arc, which is the end of the three pig story and the animal farm story, when Snow is shot and she recovers, there's a part where Rose Red actually says, "You should be dead."
Yeah.
If it had been me, I would be dead.
Yeah, because the humans don't know who I am.
No, really. That's right. But the humans need their Snow White.
And it's interesting that they've gone down that path, which is because like there is an older story, a German story, which is Snow White and Rose Red, which has got nothing to do with the Snow White story that we know, except for the fact that there is a dwarf in that story as well. And she sort of makes a few comments about don't mention the dwarf.
Yeah.
You know, but the humans have this story. And I know this from having read ahead years ago. They talk about how the fame of the character influences their strength as a fable. And so you get that kind of running through as well.
And like there's a point, and this is once again spoilers and all for a book that we've done, but there's a point in Animal Farm where there are executions.
There are
because of the revolution that they try and do.
And they have to replace those characters.
And they replace those characters because the humans need their three little pigs.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's like, and stuff like that. So it's like they have to replace them. And he goes, humans won't know it's not the same ones.
And what I like about this is they acknowledge that all the stuff has happened, all the fable stuff has happened before, and the way I understand it is they were all separate own little kingdoms in the fable world until the adversary forced them all out of their homelands, and suddenly all the fables are living together.
And so they had to put their differences aside. So, but they were all aware of each other, because there's a point where Old King Cole is reciting the story of how they became.
And Old King Cole is basically the mayor of Fabletown.
He's the mayor of Fabletown. And, but Snow holds the power.
She's the second in command, but ostensibly the leader.
I love that. But where he's reciting it, and he's basically, and it almost comes down to, and I can't remember the exact words of it, but that old Jewish poem, which is
when they came for so-and-so, I didn't do anything because it didn't involve me.
And they kind of roll.
And they mention the Emerald Kingdom, which I'm assuming is a reference to Oz.
Yeah, he says, when the adversary attacked the Emerald Kingdom, we didn't care because we didn't like them anyway.
Yeah, they were always weird, you know. And then he goes,
but then of course he came.
And when
us,
they came, and then we when they attacked the kingdom run by the lion, they were always too religious, which I'm guessing is a reference to C.S. Lewis.
Absolutely.
But the thing is, it's interesting you should mention the old Jewish fable because Willingham was recently being interviewed, and this was in an interview he did in 2006, so a few years after the book started. And he talks about the politics of the books in here, and I thought this is really interesting because someone put it to him. He said, politically, whether this is a pro-Israeli stance in this book, and he said, politically, I'm as rabidly pro-Israel, and so that, as a metaphor, was intended from the beginning. However, as much of the politics are going to intrude in fables, that's as far as I think I'm willing to go. It's impossible to keep them out entirely. We're all political creatures, whether we cop out or not. It's not going to be a political tract, yeah, but at the same time, it's not going to shy away from the fact that there are real characters and real moral and ethical centres, and we're not going to apologise for it. And I think that's what makes this book so good. It's so grounded in real human emotions
you
and
can
real
definitely see a lot
politics
of real world
in there.
We haven't heard much from Dave.
Oh, sorry.
He started flicking through the book and got sucked into it.
He started reading it again.
No, I mean, what else is there to say? I mean, it's perfect.
But you make a really good point. I mean, actually, having said that, it's something that was bothering me on the way over here. I thought, this book's been around for like 12 years and it's like it's been praised to death. Mm. Like, what more can I say about it? But it's just like, but for us, it was just the joy of, for me, rediscovery, and for you two, hearing you talk throughout the week going, this is good. Where has it been all my life? You know?
Yeah. Like playing the video game, right? That's where it kind of started. Because I'd always had this impression. I think when we did Scalped, I mentioned on the show that, you know,
you hadn't read a lot of Vertigo,
Vertigo. I've pretty much read all the classic Vertigo, everything, except Fables. Yes. I've never gone to Fables. Because then I guess I assumed that Fables was like, you know, hey, the fairy tales, this PG, it's a kid-friendly book. And
it's, you know, Vertigo, dude.
Hey, and then on top of that, it's like, man, it's gone for 150 issues. And, it, you know, look how many
how
there
do you
are
catch
to buy.
Up?
There are so many spin-offs. And then I grabbed the game and was like, this is not what I thought it was at all. You know, it's actually really adult and it's insanely clever and it's brilliantly well written.
And you know what?
It's just, I'm in love with this book, man. And I'm spewing that I can't get the second volume.
Right now,
we're gonna hunt them down. You know
these are the deluxe editions that we're reading, which are basically 10 issues a pop.
Oh,
and if you're collecting them in the old versions of the trade, it's basically two trades per deluxe edition. The thing I like about this is, like Doctor Who, it can be anything it wants to be. The first five issues is effectively a murder mystery.
Mm-hmm.
The second five issues is a political uprising story where you've got Goldilocks, who's basically a Marxist revolutionary
leader. She's brilliant. She's so well written.
And who's having a relationship with one of the
bears. With Baby Bear.
And then
I think for me, my favorite was Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, yeah, because Beast is...
Because it's true love, right? That's the spell that keeps the Beast as
and because they're
as
fighting,
a prince.
He keeps reverting.
Yeah. And he said, you try staying in love after, you know, 2,000 years of marriage, you know, whatever it is, you know.
And they're coming to snow because they're short on money and stuff like that.
And Prince Charming being the only Prince Charming, so then sleeps around with all the princesses.
And how good was that first scene of Prince Charming when he shows up in the restaurant and she comes on and she goes, what can I get you? Blah. He goes, and then at the end of it, he goes, I don't intend to pay for any of this, blah, blah, blah. And he goes, yeah, why don't you pay for it? And I'll come back to you. She goes, okay, I guess I can do that.
And he has some great line, which I've always remembered, and I remember reading it the first time around. He goes, well, I think it's just as important for a prince to keep up with his cocksmanship.
Yes.
He's almost just kind of like really lame James Bond kind of sort of dialogue that he's got going through there. That's what I love. It's unabashedly adult.
Because we should also stress with this, yes, I'll let you get back to that, but we should also stress that all the fables are now on an equal playing field. Mm. They've all lost their kingdoms. They're princes and princesses only in words.
Yeah.
They're not rich. Some of them have managed to smuggle out some of their money, like Bluebeard.
Yeah.
And so basically Bluebeard, who's basically has an entire castle inside his apartment because he's could afford to cast a spell that would actually hide it.
But that's the other thing too. There's been this general amnesty, so all their crimes before the adversary have been forgotten. So Bluebeard used to kill all of his wives, was his thing. But now that's like they're not allowed to mention that. So even though the first arc is a murder mystery, they're going like, but he's got a history of murder. Yeah, yeah. Like, no, we can't mention that. And Big B Wolf is not allowed anywhere near the animal farm.
He's forbidden from upstate. Yeah.
There's also like the artwork. I can't think of a better word than elegant. There's just something really, really pretty about looking at it.
You start with James Jean's covers. Which are
like best covers. Like,
which are basically 150 or 130 something issues of this book. Every single one of them is a gallery hangable piece of art.
Is this the same artist as Fairest?
No, they've changed it because I think Fairest has been Adam Hughes.
Oh, okay.
For most of it. We've had James Jean at this stage, and you've had a different artist, and his name escapes me at the moment for the last bunch of them.
It's
the
not
cover
Jock.
Artist
it's
has,
not Jock, is it?
It's not Jock. It's Raus, I think, is the current cover artist on that. Correct
They're
me if
gorgeous.
I'm wrong, listeners. James Jean is the earliest cover artist here, and you have Lan Medina doing the interiors for the first arc, and you have Mark Buckingham doing the interiors for the second arc. Mark Buckingham is pretty much the longest running artist. He is effectively, I think, since issue 100, been continuous artist, but he's done arcs all throughout the thing. But the because they have like a different feel for different arcs, it doesn't matter if the art is slightly different for each arc, because the murder mystery arc has a slightly different art feel to the big, bright and colourful animal farm.
But they're close enough that it's not jarring. Yes. Mm. And was it just me, or did anybody see a resemblance, and I'm going to say that she was gorgeous, because she was absolutely gorgeous, a resemblance between Snow White and Lois Lane?
Yeah, I know. No, but that's exactly
the
sort of...
Snow White was gorgeous.
No, but that's exactly the sort of character... Well, Snow White is meant to be, you know, the fairest of them all.
Yeah.
And... I think the Lois Lane comparison is completely apt.
She's got the same personality.
She is. She's, and that's why I mentioned before when I was talking about Lois Lane being a strong female, like, you know, that sort of the stuff that happened to Jane Foster wouldn't happen to Lois Lane.
No.
Because Lois Lane wouldn't take that. Absolutely. Snow White's not going to take that either. Snow White is a, if you want to look at an example of a book that has strong female characters, go look at Fables.
Yes. This feels to me like some kind of messed up mix of Mulder and Scully or, you know, Watson and Sherlock Holmes. In between the two of those two.
It is, and the it's kind of almost, and there's a little bit of moonlighting in there as well. You kind of got that.
Well, the relationship between Bigby and Snow White
is
fabulous.
Mm. That's exactly the sort of feel they're going for, because Bigby, and like there's a beautiful moment in this where he's doing his parlor room scene where he's revealing the murder, and he says, you know,
with a towel wrapped around his
he's just been for a swim beforehand in on the roof of this of the building, and he says, like, you know, every detective, we don't get a lot of, you know, great moments. He said, yeah, every now and then you get a murder mystery case, but most of it's just random patrol.
I've never fired a gun.
All that sort of stuff. But he said, you know, we all want the parlor room scene. And they said, well, should we go to a parlor? He goes, no, that's not what it's about. And so he gets to do his whole big reveal thing. And then after that's all over, Snow White's like, there's one thing I don't understand. Why did I have to come and dance with you at this big gala ball? And he goes, well, I just wanted to ask you out. I couldn't think of another way of doing it. and that's the kind of thing. And that starts the kind of, you know, will they, won't they relationship, which is why I say moonlighting between Snow White and Bigby.
And it's tangible, because in the second arc in Animal Farm, Bigby is genuinely worried about Snow White, but he's not allowed to go.
Yeah, and he has to put this posse together.
Yeah.
Which is basically, you know, Jack from Jack of the Beanstalk, you know.
Bluebeard.
Bluebeard is
Prince
one of the
Charming.
And Prince Charming, and this bumbling car goes up there. And I like the way, and speaking of that, I like the way that they've brought these personalities of what those characters would be like when the book's over, when they're not, you know, rushing in to save the day. What would they have to do if they had to function on a daily basis?
Well, like, the thing I've always had this kind of joke, like, what would heaven really be like if there was an afterlife? You know, like, after 1,000 years, like, you'd be bored already, you know, like, let alone eternity. And, like... that's actually in this, that, like, all the characters have that. I've been around for 800 years. God damn.
Well, it's something, you know, like Pinocchio.
Like, yeah, like what you're saying with Pinocchio. Like, and I really like that, you know?
Yeah, no, and I like that, which is kind
it's
of...
It's clever, but it's not annoying. You know, it's not obnoxious.
It is,
you know?
And like, you know, half of them have become con artists as a result of it.
Well, I love
like,
the fact that Jack is, Jack is just always resigned. Trying to get the next con.
Yeah.
So he's always like looking for the next. He's trying to do a doc. He's trying to do a doc com at one point.
Yeah, and you've got Jack doing that, but Prince Charming's effectively a con artist as well because he's just come back because he's been kicked out. He's scammed every royal family in Europe, so he's had to come back to America to try, and he tries to raffle off his title,
which is worthless.
Which is
anyway.
Worthless. You've got someone like Flycatcher who can't stop eating flies in public. You know?
He goes, "Why are you a janitor?" Well, because I keep getting
busy, keeps catching me, you know, and all that sort of stuff. So you've got those kind of, and then nice little references because they're real, and that's what makes Fables isn't great because Fables has got a great high concept. It's got characters you instantly recognize, which is half the battle for any book. You know, you think about.
It's highbrow enough, though,
That
there are references in it where I go, I don't know that book. Well, I need to go look up that fairy tale.
There's literally, like, Animal Farm is not just a reference to George Orwell, but it's also a reference, got Lord of the Flies references in there, and it's got all these other references.
And I love that when they put the pig's head on a stake and he says, it's a literary reference. But they never come back to it.
No.
And, like, so
and,
like,
that, and somebody else says, what's that about? And he says, Jesus, read a book.
Read a book once in a while. Yeah.
Cool example of that is like when they do the Jungle Book. They don't do the Disney movie Jungle Book. They do the Kipling.
Yes.
Yeah, and they actually referred to me and said, oh, yes, he's from the Kipling School of Fables, or something like that. Yeah. So, and that's the thing. It's not limited to Western fables either.
And we should say it's ridiculously funny. Like,
it's sharp.
The
sharp
sequence in Animal Farm where Snow White is chained up.
Yes, with the key?
With the key. Yeah. And she's saying, what if
I'm
I try and, try, and pick,
yeah.
try and pick the lock for you, blah,
oh,
blah,
yeah,
blah.
Yeah.
And he can't help her.
And you've got Wiley, so, I can't by deed or word.
No,
you
and
know.
Finally somebody says, have you tried that key that unlocked yours? And she doesn't. And he goes, how thick are you?
Yeah. And she's been chiseling away, keep hitting his leg the whole time. No, it's brilliant. No, I love everything about this book. I loved it the first time I read it. I don't know why I stopped reading it. I think it was just, you know, I probably stopped reading around the time that I stopped reading.
Oh, I plan to read them all.
Reading comics for a while.
And then Ferris.
I finished Scalped this week, so now I've got a new long-running series.
Well, I've got all 8 volumes in deluxe editions.
Does that carry it up to date?
No, it takes you up back to the 80s or 90s or something. Oh, really? So, yeah, we've got a while to go.
So maybe it might be a better idea if you're wanting to get the whole thing to maybe collect
Either collect the other trades or do it digitally.
Or collect them digitally while we're waiting for trades to come out.
Exactly,
so,
right.
I think we could play this, don't you?
Undoubtedly. Yeah.
This is Comics 101.
This is essential reading. So, absolutely.
Yeah, crap.
Absolutely.
If you only read one book the whole year, make
this
it is
this. It.
Yeah, really,
and if you were thinking about making that book, The Dark Knight Strikes Again, this is definitely.
Hey, we haven't done Spider Island yet, have we?
Speaking of Spider Island, we're going to do our feedback in a minute. We have a comment around that.
But I mean, this book like sucks you right in. Like,
it does.
You forget you're reading a comic, which is so rare in every, you know,
probably the best thing you could have said. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I remember, and I'm keeping in mind, I've read this before. Like, but it's been 10 years since I read these first issues, and I just completely got drawn into it.
I started to read this, and literally was halfway through into the second volume, and going, "Oh crap!" I was finished reading the pick by Wednesday, which is so unlikely.
That's why it's unfortunate. There's only 8 volumes in this edition because you'll do it in 8 sittings.
Yeah,
you know, you'll just sit down.
It's
and
an amazing read, and it is well worth it. So
no, look, we can't recommend this enough. But I think I hear coming around the mountain is a certain girl.
Oh, this girl here.
Hey, girl. Last week, we celebrated our 100th episode, and we got a ton of congratulations and well wishes and so forth. Look, you know, I'm going to single out a bunch of people like Paul Bedford, who shared the 100th episode and just said, all you got to do is listen, people. Great podcast. Congratulations. Oz Comic Con were kind enough to share it on their major page. Tom Taylor and Nicholas Scott, of course, retweeted it. We got some comments from some listeners as well. John Friswell said, awesome show, guys. Nice trip down memory lane and great interviews. Thanks for the memories and introducing me to some great comic books. Thanks for all your time and hard work that goes into the show. As Stan Lee would say, you know, David, back when I interviewed behind the panels, back when I invented behind the panels, I knew it would be marvelous. Congratulations and excelsior. You know, Matthew Katusiak also gives us some well wishes. Says, marvelous podcast, guys. Really enjoyed the blooper reel and hearing clips from earlier podcasts. Thanks for introducing me to some comics such as Guardians of the Galaxy and The Dark Knight Returns. You're welcome. That's what the show is all about. Of course, we also had some feedback about the news this week, which is those changes and also the 5 films that Marvel has announced. Mike from Canada Mike Wheeler from Canada says, "Dear panel
owners, happy birthday, Mike."
Oh, happy birthday, Mike! Yeah, we missed that a couple of weeks ago, but happy birthday. He says, "Dear Panelonians, what are your speculations for the 5 untitled films?"
And I think we now have officially a term for us, Panelonians.
I'm hoping one will be an Avengers film where everyone in New York turns into giant spiders, including the Hulk. It could be called the Avengers Spider Island. Enough with the Spider Island, Mike. For God's sake, we'll do it just to stop the Spider Island.
It's an unheralded classic. Come on.
He says, "I know Peters would be in favour." Okay. I said, rest assured that we are going to cover this, our Canadian cousin. Look, I think some of the speculation is pretty obvious. That we know Doctor Strange is going to be one of them. We're pretty certain Cap 3's already got a date. So
please do a Black Panther.
We're pretty sure Thor 3 will be in the mix somewhere, and that May 2019 has to be an Avengers.
You know, also, you know why if they do Black Panther?
Yeah.
Illuminati.
Yeah, but not just that. Can we also...
with everyone but Reed Richards.
Oh, yeah, but we don't have Reed Richards. So.
We also have to be very careful because remember, Kevin Feige for a long time has... And we know that he gets things made if he really has something going like Guardians. He's had a thing for Namor for a long time.
I reckon... Look, we've got next week...
That would be awesome.
Next week is San Diego Comic-Con. Comic-Con International San Diego. We've got that coming up, so I reckon one or two things might be announced at that.
Because remember, there was a Namor banner, a poster for Namor about 3 years ago at Comic-Con. So he's got a thing about it. So it may happen.
Maybe we'll finally get a MODOK movie. It'd be awesome. It would be Toby Jones in it.
Is MODOK 2 associated with Fantastic Four? That's the question. I don't know who's associated with it. Someone make us a chart.
See, theoretically, Namor is associated with the X-Men because he's supposed to be a mutant. Yeah. But apparently, Marvel still owns Namor. So.
Yeah, no. Namor is in the clear. Namor is fine. Yeah. Like, the Inhumans are fine, even though they had their origins in the X-Men.
I would love for them to just do an event film. You know, we've talked about a Civil War or something. Yeah. But just one event film now.
Yeah.
Be cool, just with everybody in it.
Exactly. Like, you know, you
it'd
have
be like another Avengers, I guess.
But I think, you know.
Avengers.
At this point, I just want Strange. So,
Strange, we know we're getting.
Yeah, I want
Strange.
Strange,
we know. They haven't renounced the release date, but we know we're getting Strange.
And Ant Man's going to be split into 3 films, I think. I think that's what it is. Yeah.
Ant Man, or There and Back Again.
Yeah. No, Ant-Man, they've just locked all those dates in case they missed their release.
It'll be Ant-Man 2, Yellow Jacket.
I was going to say Ant-Man
3,
sorry.
Giant Man.
It'll be Ant-Man, the Desolation of Yellow Jacket. And Ant-Man 3, the Battle of the Five Ants.
Or Ant-Man 3, I actually created
Ultron.
Battle
of the Five Ants. So, yeah, like, and one of them might be directed by Edgar Wright. He might come back. You know, I've noticed that Kevin Feige is like, all like, oh, why Adam McKay's the best person for this? It's like, backpedaling much.
Do you guys think they'll show Daredevil's costume?
Oh,
the con?
They'd have to start showing something.
I'm actually hoping they'll put a trailer out for it.
Because they've
been
filming and everything. All the cast has been announced. Yeah, so
they could do a first look trailer. I think they'll do a first look trailer for that. I think they're going to do a first look trailer for the Avengers.
Yeah.
There'll be something for the Avengers.
Yeah.
Because there's been leaked footage already of the Hulkbuster. So,
they'll probably do, like a teaser trailer. Yeah,
it'll be a really early first look at that, and I think there'll be definitely a
first look at Daredevil. Well, you might get the announcement of the other... Oh, no, they probably... unless they announce the other cast, they could bring out the Defenders, but they probably won't.
But they haven't started on the other shows yet.
There has been rumors of a standalone Hulk film.
Now, that was kind of solidified over the last 2 weeks with Mark Ruffalo talking.
I heard a strong rumor that was going to be... There's a title floating around, which is called Hulk and the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Interesting.
So I don't
which
know
would lead
that.
Credence to Mark Ruffalo talking about World War Hulk.
Unless they bring Hulk into, unless they introduce the Defenders concept on television and then bring Hulk to his other traditional home, which is Hulk and the Defenders.
We didn't miss we got to make sure we don't miss the big one, which is Captain Marvel.
Captain Marvel is one that they've been talking about because they do want to have a strong female-led movie. I wonder if the introduction of the female Thor is indicative of what they're going to do on screen. Or Chris Evans is also talking about retiring from acting for a while to concentrate on filmmaking. So they could bring the Falcon in as Captain America in the films as
or
well.
Or Black Widow standalone.
Black Widow standalone's been discussed as well.
I would go for that. Mm. I would really like to see Black Widow as a standalone, but put that as a Netflix show. Because I'd really like to see that expanded out into more than just a movie.
Yeah, but it'd be good. I mean, we'd see what they could do. I mean, I think they'd certainly need a female-led film. So I think a Captain Marvel one is one I would kill to see. Mm. And they have been teasing that for a while. You're right. They have been talking, that's not a bad idea. And given that they've gone cosmic,
Yes.
You know, they can you know, have a Guardians cameo or whatever. You
I'm know, praying, praying.
There's been talk of a Guardians. A Punisher one would be great. Yeah, because they got Punisher back.
A real Punisher. A proper Punisher. But
I think Kevin Feige said we're still working out what we're going to do with him.
Well, see, Punisher could be street level. We could put Punisher as a Netflix series.
Yeah.
And then that could
This
all
is just
up
the
up
first
that.
Wave of Netflix shows. Mm. You know, they could keep this going for ages.
It all depends on how well it does.
Yeah. Mm. I think the Netflix stuff... Look, you know, Marvel and television have been a little bit dicey the last year because of how long Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. took to get going.
Yeah.
So let's not sort of just assume that got all the great characters, it's going to be great. Admittedly, the Netflix stuff is known characters.
It's known characters. It is.
And it seems to be impeccable casting on
not
Daredevil so far.
Bound by network television.
Yes.
You know, which is another big factor. And it is limited series.
Yeah.
They are literally... 12 episodes were done.
The people that they've got involved in it so far, like Drew Goddard's still doing the first couple of episodes. Mm. So all that stuff has got me feeling pretty good.
It's looking good.
Yeah.
And Guardians in 2 weeks, people.
Oh, hey. Well, Guardian for when we're recording this, four days we're seeing Guardians.
Don't rub it in. So we'll rub it in.
We'll talk about it a little bit next week, just to kind of our impressions and whatnot. That'll be Dave
Unless
and I.
You're embargoed.
No, we won't be. We're not embargoed because that's actually the premiere date in the US.
24th.
So, yep. Oh, okay. So... we won't be embargoed, so we'll talk a little bit about that. We weren't even embargoed on the 17 minutes of stuff. So
yeah, that's
you know.
True. Next week's show...
is we're doing Lock and Key.
Lock and Key.
Welcome to Lovecraft, which is by Joe Hill, who is the son of some writer.
Stephen King.
Yeah. Yay. Oh, that's right, that guy. Has he written anything of note?
Joe Hill?
No, Stephen King.
Oh, a few things.
Yeah.
I've only read 50 of them. So.
Right. So not really a prolific author either. I'm really excited. Another one of those ones that when we finally talked about doing it, I was like, yes, I've been wanting to do this for ages.
Yeah, me too.
So that's next week. A week after that, we will do our proper review of Guardians of the Galaxy when we'll all have had a chance to see it at the cinema. That'll be the film movie, in which you may have guessed we're a little bit excited by. So looking forward to that. But until then, can I just throw out one quick announcement?
No,
I was segueing.
I just got to throw out one quick announcement. We're going to talk more about this on GMC. Please listen to GMC for more details.
Or Geek Movie Club.
For the Geek Movie Club. But all I'm going to say on this show is next week, something special is coming. we're locking down all of the details now. And all I'm going to say is for our 6th anniversary of podcasting, because we are fast approaching our 6th anniversary, Film Actually is returning to the podcasting world. All right.
And a return of an old friend.
And we'll go into much more detail in the Geek Movie Club, this week's episode, so that you can find out more about it. So keep an eye on geekactually.com. That's where information will be
and
flowing.
We should say, if you want to look for everything that we're doing, geekactually.com is our podcast network home. You can find everything to do with comics on behindthepanels.net. You can follow this show there. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, depending on how you found us. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/behindthepanels and send any feedback you'd like to send to us at feedback@behindthepanels.net. You can find me individually on Twitter at DVDBits, where I'll be pimping all my stuff.
And you can find me on Twitter at David McVeigh, or, of course, at geekactually.com.
You can find me Twitter at Dave Longo.
So join us next week for Welcome to Lovecraft, the Lock and Key first volume. Until then, I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
I'm Mayalik Malef.
And this is Behind the Panels. Who's afraid of the big bad wolf? The big bad wolf? The big bad wolf? Who's afraid of the big bad wolf?